I have a feeling I know the answer to this, but I'm still curious if I'm the only one that keeps getting all of these notifications sent to their inbox or all of these messages and articles forwarded to them on social media, all having to do with coronavirus, and all of them saying the exact same thing: things will never be the same again. Am I alone in that? I doubt it. Here's just a few of the things that I've gotten recently. We're about to live in a dictatorship, because President Trump is going to postpone the November elections and bring about a military authoritarianism. And notice that all of these things are from supposedly reputable sources, so they carry with it the air of credibility. We're also going to become totally cashless as a society. I don't know if you knew that, because no one's going to want to grab the dollar that you were just holding in your hand, and so we're going to become cashless. No more dollar bills, no more coins, everything on cards. And let me just say, if that's going to happen, so be it, but it better not occur before I get my Harriet Tubman $20 bill. I've been waiting for Andrew Jackson to get ripped off of that thing and replaced with Harriet Tubman, and I want to see it before we go cashless. Just look at that. She's awesome. Like a real-life superhero. Anyway, we're going to change the way we make laws. Congress is going to become a virtual meeting. Lawmakers are going to stay in their home districts, and they're going to convene and work online together instead of meeting. And speaking of government, people are going to want more government in their lives. Most people are going to turn to government to help them through difficulties. And the way we deal with people, handshakes are no longer going to happen. Instead, foot bumps or leg wraps will become the norm. You have got to be kidding me. And young people, you're going to forget about college. Many institutions of higher learning are either going to have to go all virtual or they're going to collapse. And forget your dream wedding, because wedding culture is about to change as well. Think 50 attendees rather than hundreds. There'll be no receiving line, no hugs, no dollar dances with the happy couple. Jenny and I made out like bandits at our dollar dance. Well, I didn't really accrue that much money myself, but she took in quite a bit. Not sure why that happened, but I reaped the benefits, so it doesn't really matter. And sports. I've been informed that sporting events are going to again be played, but this time in front of drastically reduced crowds or potentially no live crowds at stadiums ever again. And for me as a teacher, students and teachers are going to be required to wear gloves and masks when they return to school. I've already got mine picked out. And even you in the general population, you're going to be required to wear face masks. Like, that right there is a serious ad that is now on the internet. But what about church? Since that's what we're doing this morning, how is all of this going to impact long-term the church? Well, plenty of people have answers to that as well. Just look up the articles. Fewer people are going to want to handle the offering plates or buckets. Smaller worship services are going to become the new normal. Churches are going to attempt to cap their services at 200 or 300 people. There'll be no more standing and greeting time at church. Church huggers will no longer be tolerated. Even handshakes are going to be minimized. Maybe we can do that leg wrap thing. I'm going to take so many of you down if I get that chance. Watch your back, John Dean. The death rate of churches is going to worsen. Many churches aren't going to survive the consequences of coronavirus. And thus, church adoption will increase significantly. That is, where a financially healthier church brings the people and the assets of a struggling church into their church family. And churches are going to adopt more virtual practices. All right, so all of those things are out there, and you're reading them just like I'm reading them if you're paying any attention to the news and what's coming into your inbox. But I want to tell you the truth about those predictions. None of them may come true. Some of them may come true. All of them may come true. Well, with the exception of the leg or foot smack thing. That's honestly the dumbest, most awkward thing that I've ever heard of. And whoever wrote that article was obviously really struggling to meet a deadline. But anyway, that's the point. Nobody knows what's going to end up happening. And here's the crazy thing. Maybe you've never thought about this, but nobody had any idea what was going to end up happening in the future, say, last summer. Nobody saw any of this coming.
The cards can reveal things that you will never see by yourself.
The reality is we're just more aware right now of how insecure the future is, given our insecurities in this moment. But honestly, the future was never predictable. We just thought it was. And that, again, is one of the greatest blessings of being a believer. Don't lose sight of that. It's a cliched phrase for sure. I know that it is. But it's cliched for a reason. It's unbelievably true. We don't know what tomorrow holds, but we do know who holds tomorrow. And so, based on that, here is a prediction that you can take to the bank if you're a believer, because it is as rock solid as God's word. God has his own agenda of which we can only know a part. Whatever he's doing, it's to will and to work for his good pleasure. If God can work good from the cross of Jesus Christ, he can work good from all of this. Only God can make known to us the path of life. Only his word is a trustworthy light unto that path. Only in his presence do we find fullness and joy. Nothing, not even a virus, can rob us of the promise of union with Christ. And whatever our God ordains, he is working all things together for good for those of us who know him. Do not forget that. We are in strange times for sure, and that's why I want to do like a little mini series here on this current storm. Not because you haven't heard enough about the pandemic, because you have. We all have.
God, can you make it stop?
But because you haven't heard enough from God's word about those things that are affecting us right now. All those peripheral things that are coming with crazy times like this. See, sometimes we encounter storms in our own personal life, but they're personal to us. You see, most all of you never knew that I went through all of that anxiety stuff that I struggled with several years ago. And some of us have no idea what you went through 6 months ago or 2 years ago. And we're your church family. We deal with our own storms in our own way. But this, well, this is one that we're all dealing with and we're all well aware of. And our personal situations relative to that storm may be different. But the storm itself is well known. So I wanted to address it, not in the same way that I did several weeks ago when I talked about, you know, how the church can respond to coronavirus. But this time again, concentrating on some of the dangerous side elements to all of this that can ensnare us if we're not careful. I want you to go back to those predictions that we were talking about just a little bit ago. You know what that provokes in me when I read those things or I hear those things from people about how we'll never be in sports stadiums again together? I just want things to go back to the way they were before. I catch myself saying that. God, let's just go back to normal, please. I went to McAllister's to get carry out the other day, and the person that came out to take care of us was a student of mine. And one of the first things that he said, I'm ready for all of this to be over and us to get back to normal. You see, I think everybody feels that way. But what happens if a few, or maybe even many, of those predictions come true? What if the world really is changing and it's never going to go back to the way that it was before? And maybe that's the part that everybody does agree on. We don't agree on the specifics, but we agree things aren't ever going to be the exact same. My question is, are we okay with that? And I'm not sure we are, because we are people who tend towards nostalgia. And you don't have to think of it in light of this situation. Several weeks ago, I was watching Andy Griffith. I do that when Jenny falls asleep at night. I switch over and I watch Andy Griffith. And I was watching the episode where the barn of this guy burned to the ground and he blamed it on the kids and Opie. And so Andy was going to pay for the barn. And then Barney is there as Andy's getting ready to write the check. And Barney ends up getting sauced on the guy's moonshine that he was making in the shed. And
2-300?
What is it, Barney?
Hi. Let me tell you something.
You're trying to what?
I'm trying to tell you something that's very important.
Wait a minute. Maybe you won't have to tell me.
Andy then puts all the pieces together that, wait a minute, you were running a still and you burned your own barn to the ground. And then the guy confesses and Andy and him end up helping Barney stumbling back to the vehicle. And about that time, Jenny, who I thought was asleep, rears up and says, okay, that would never happen. And I said to her, well, it used to happen that way back in the 50s. Things were so much purer then. She rolled her eyes, rolled over, and went back to sleep. But I imagine that there's a lot of us who think that way. Things were so much simpler then. Things were so much better then. So much easier then. Things were so much less stressful then. If only we could go back to those days. I guess we're all just going to pretend that in those days we weren't all living in fear of a nuclear holocaust, teaching our kids to dive under their scrawny little wooden desks as though that was going to protect them from the atomic fallout of a Soviet attack.
First you duck, and then you cover.
But nevertheless, that's what we do. We pine away for the old days, and those who are younger pine away for their youthful days. Maybe your old days are the 50s. For me, my old days are the 80s and the 90s. But we think back fondly on those times. And so here's what I'm suggesting to you. Let's say this coronavirus stuff does change our lives permanently moving forward. We're going to do the same thing. We'll think back fondly on how we used to be able to stand shoulder to shoulder in Times Square on New Year's Eve. Or when we had season tickets to the crowded Colts games. Or when we loved to hang out on the lawn with all of the jumping people at Ruoff Music Center. At the various concerts throughout the summer. Or when we could cram into church on Easter and sing praises to God with our arm wrapped around the person next to us. And we'll say it, things were so much better then. Do me a favor, open your Bibles to the book of Ecclesiastes. I read a great article on all this by David Gibson, and he pointed back to this passage, specifically in Ecclesiastes, the third chapter. Pick it up there in verse 1. There is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. What do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. And then skip on down to verse 15. Whatever is has already been, and what will be has been before. There is a time for everything, a time for what you have already lived, a time for what you will live, and yes, a time for what you are living now. And that's the key. That's the danger in this nostalgic pining away for the way things used to be. It denies, or ignores at least, the reality of God's presence right now. In your present, He is right here. He is with you. And you are, hopefully, closer to Him than you used to be. You have a better relationship with Him today than you did yesterday. And if you can't say that, then have a better relationship with Him tomorrow than you do today. That is what is meant for us as believers, regardless of the changing of the seasons around us. You see what we're focused on? Look back now at verse 11. God has set eternity in the human heart. That's where our vision is cast. It's not looking to the glory days. Sorry, Bruce Springsteen's one of my favorites, and that is a great song. And it's nostalgic for me. It takes me back to when I was a boy in Terre Haute, sitting in the barbershop with my brother and my dad at Jim's barbershop. And Jim, by the way, looked a lot like Bruce Springsteen. There's a side-by-side. Maybe my barber was Bruce Springsteen. Anyway, we are to be focused with an eye on heaven, not on our best days from our youth. Or the best days before the pandemic. And why? Well, flip a few pages to Ecclesiastes 7 and look at verse 10. Do not say, why were the old days better than these? For it is not wise to ask such questions. Oh, why is it not wise? Here's why it's not wise. Because as human beings, we have blinders. We are blind to the problems of the past, and we are blind to the blessings of the present. This really came to me a few years ago. I had a great memory from when I was younger. I remembered when my dad took my brother and I to a Colts game, and after the game was over, we went to a downtown Indianapolis Mexican restaurant. It's right there near downtown. It's called Acapulco Joe's. And I remembered it as being amazing. Fast forward, and just a couple years ago, I took Jenny. Couldn't wait to show her this great place that I'd remembered as being so wonderful. Neither one of us finished our meal. The salsa there came in ketchup squirter bottles. No joke. I mean, it was just not good to us. Maybe if you know the place, maybe you like it. But it wasn't good for me. And as we're walking out, I remember saying to Jenny, I think this was one I should have just left as a good memory. She didn't say anything in response because she was doubled over heaving into the trash can there on the street. And I've got other stories like that. A few years ago, I was preaching in Terre Haute at the very church that I was baptized in, and the couple that had bought our old house were in attendance, and they invited me to go back and see my old house. So many memories there. I remembered how huge that front yard was. I remember the basement and how big it was, and then the home run fence in the backyard and our treehouse clubhouse that we had. All of it. And I went, and it wasn't the same at all. It was so much smaller, so much less impressive or cool. Well, what's happening there? I know you've got examples of this very thing. C.S. Lewis maybe explained this better than anybody. He said that nostalgia is a specific emotion of longing and that it's always bittersweet. When we feel that, we're feeling something that we've lost. And yet, it's done in a way that's a beautiful perception of what has been lost, and so therefore, we're longing for it. Sometimes that's a place, sometimes it's a person. I don't know if you remember this, but when Facebook came out, there was a huge cultural impact in terms of divorce, a big uptick. And why? Because people could reconnect with their old flames from high school. And they had that feeling of nostalgia, a longing for something that they thought was great. And so it caused problems in marriages. Many spouses divorced and got back together with their old high school boyfriend or girlfriend, and they got married, and guess what happened? It wasn't so great. They ended up getting divorced again. You go back and see the spike when Facebook takes off in divorces. It's really kind of amazing to watch. You see, nostalgia is often fleeting. And that's why Lewis says only children or emotionally immature people think that what they're longing for is actually what they're longing for. I guess I was being emotionally immature because I remembered that restaurant and it gave me a great feeling. And so I thought if I could go back to that place, I'd have that lovely feeling all over again, and I would have it every time I went there. Didn't happen. I got a brand new memory for myself. And Lewis would have told me that it wasn't going to happen. He says it's really unwise to think otherwise, and that's exactly what the author of Ecclesiastes was saying. When you mature, you realize that nostalgia kind of plays a trick on you. It intensifies your emotions. You see, when you grow up and you mature, you realize that if you go back to that old house, it may be nice, but it will also be ordinary and less impressive in many ways. And simply going back to that location is not going to bring about the intensity of the feeling. Lewis wrote, "The book or the music in which we thought the beauty was located will betray us if we trust to them, for it was not in them, it only came through them, and what came through them was longing. These things, the beauty, the memory of our own past, are good images of what we really desire. But if they are mistaken for the thing itself, they turn into dumb idols, breaking the hearts of their worshipers. For they are not the thing itself. They are only the scent of a flower we have not found, the echo of a tune we have not heard, news from a far country we have not yet visited." Now, go back to Ecclesiastes 3:11 and you're going to be amazed at something here. "He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart." Eternity is set in our hearts. We have a longing in us for another time and another place. When you experience nostalgia, that is your heart longing for a person more beautiful than any person you've ever met, or a place more amazing than you have ever been to. We think we're longing for the past, but the past is never as good as what our minds are telling us that it is. And Lewis says that God is giving you in that moment one of the most profound glimpses into the intensity of perfection and beauty that you are yet to see. That longing I feel, that sense of love and warmth and home, happiness, contentment, and joy, that purer and better time that we imagine, what is in fact pulling on your heartstrings isn't the past. It's the future. It's your sense of belonging and home that has just cracked the surface of your life for just a moment, and then it's gone. It's a sign of things to come, when all of these longings will be fulfilled beyond your wildest imagination. Dad and I will dine on Acapulco Joe's heaven style, squirter bottles and all, and Jen can come too.
Mm.
That's the message of Ecclesiastes. That's what we're being told. We are built for home, a place that we cannot yet see. And so when we get that flashing moment of nostalgia, it's like tiny pinpricks of our eternal home that is breaking through and penetrating into our present life. Wise people, according to Ecclesiastes, understand that God made us long for Him and long for home. You know that, right? It's one of the most obvious proofs of the existence of God, that nothing in this world can satisfy those longings, those nostalgic feelings, that even trying to relive our glorious past will leave us woefully short of experiencing. Wise people, Scripture says, and then Lewis reiterates in his own way, wise people don't look backward when they get nostalgic. They allow the feeling to propel them forward. They look up to heaven and they look to home. I don't know, and you don't know, what the days of the future will bring. I don't know if things will be like they were before. I don't know if anything will return to what we call normal. But whatever will be, Christians can and must know this. God is in it. He is our normal. He is our constant, and while the world may struggle, pining away for the past, you and I can and must set a better example. We strain and long for the days ahead when all our longings will be fulfilled. God bless you. We'll see you next week.